Hey everyone, this is Ryan here. Thank you for joining us for the episode with Tina Troyer of Purely Learning. I wanted to give you a heads up on the audio. There is a lot of reverb in the audio and I can't seem to take it out, but please disregard that sound and enjoy the show because there's a lot of good stuff in it. Thank you.
Welcome to The Peg Doesn't Fit.
Peg Doesn't Fit highlights change makers in education. I'm Ryan Bartle.
And I'm Eric Steven. Thanks for listening. We're hopeful you find value in your personal and professional development journey through our content. Enjoy the show.
Welcome everybody to The Peg Doesn't Fit. Today we have Tina Troyer. She is the founder of Purely Learning, and I'm pretty thrilled about this, but welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to do this because it has been a passion for me for a long time, and it's something that I looked into my first year of teaching.
Holy now crap.
And first year of teaching, that would be, I think, almost 20 years ago, wow. Something like that.
Well, before we came on here, Tina and I were I don't know if we were reminiscing. We were bemoaning the fact that we are so old because I know Tina because we went to Bethel together. Bethel College, middle of Kansas, and we were in the same education classes. And so what I'm excited about with this is when I see teachers breaking out of what they're doing, trying to do something different. And this was so cool that I knew you and then I saw what you were doing, and I was like, oh my gosh, we gotta have you come on the show. So let's talk about this. Tell everybody where you've been. How did you get to this point? You've been a teacher for about 20 years. Go ahead.
All right. It was really my first year teaching in the classroom where I saw the impact of how much I was learning when I was the teacher. And I just felt like, why aren't the kids getting the same when I get to explain things and deeply understand something? I wanted to give that same authentic learning over to my students, and I wanted to figure out a way for that to happen. I also remember looking at the old pyramid of learning that we all have seen probably millions of times on the internet, where it's the pyramid, and at the deepest level of that pyramid is we learn best through teaching others. So that motivated me thinking, well, of course, we learn the most when we're explaining and summarizing what we know through to other people. And I wanted to make that in my classroom. So I had a little girl who was working a lot on fluency, and she was really precious, but I put her as the leader of two of her classmates. And although her fluency wasn't exactly where it needed to be, it grew leaps and bounds because I was writing this explicit instruction for how she would teach her classmates. And watching her, because she had the authority, she was just a precious, amazing leader. And, you know, she was working on becoming the best reader she could be. And that year she did. Her scores went up and I got to see that with her. And over the years, you know, I looked more into what is peer teaching and figured out ways to get my students to be in charge of their learning and to have the opportunity to teach others. Later on with that cone of learning or the pyramid we've all seen, I kind of researched that, and it wasn't exactly what it is that we see. That pyramid is a little bit skewed and people have changed it a lot. The original research is more that just we learn best by what we see, say, and do. It kind of has been changed to that, oh, we learn 10% of what we read, 50% of what we see, and 90% of what we teach. That's not exactly what the original researcher had written up. And that study, you know, isn't exactly as clear and concise as what it's always shown to be online and in the diagrams. But at the same time, like, there has been gobs of research over peer-to-peer instruction and peer-to-peer strategies and things like that.
Good. So you tell us when did you decide, you had an inkling way back when first year teaching, when did you actually decide, you know what, I got to do something about this, make a product? Did you have other things in your head before then? Like, oh, I should make a game, or I should do this, or was it immediately what you're calling clearly now?
Well, I've worked on it for really a number of years. I think in my first kind of view of it involved reading instruction, and I would have my kids would lead the small group reading stations, and that's kind of how it started. But then later I've moved a lot into math, English, math, even writing to explain in math. There's just endless possibilities for this peer teaching method that I think is so important, because peer teaching, just all the benefits, and I always still wonder, why aren't we using them more in the classroom? And I know we always are told as teachers not to be the sage on the stage and getting away from that. But too often teachers just result back to that and kids are just sitting all day. And I think it's me too. I think we want to change the things that we maybe are not good at. And for me, sitting and listening to a speaker is very boring. I can't just sit there and listen. I can if I'm like driving my car. I can if I'm on the stair climber at the gym. Then I listen to all the podcasts in the world. But if I'm just sitting there listening, you just don't listen. If I'm talking to somebody one-on-one, then I'll pay attention. But in a lecture hall, it's not an easy skill. And so I think I want to eliminate that from my students as much as I can to make it something that is more meaningful instead of just sitting there trying to take in knowledge.
Right. Do you feel like, is it for the teachers, is the hiccup barrier, whatever, is it, I don't want to relinquish control? What's causing that?
Yeah. You know, I think it is some of what control, and I think it's, there's so much that teachers have to meet with standards, and it's the quickest way to get the information out to the kids to do kind of the direct instruction. And direct instruction, of course, is vital to teaching anytime. But when direct instruction is longer than 15 minutes, we need to mix in other ways. And so allowing students to be able to talk with others, which, of course, there's tons of strategies for the classroom that we use regularly. The think, pair, shares, and all of the strategies that teachers did when the push for engagement was so strong 15, 20 years ago. We use those, but I still think there's something a little different from saying, turn and talk to a neighbor versus you're going to be teaching this to a partner. Mm-hmm. It's not the same.
Yeah, it is a big stretch. Would you say that perhaps those taking strategies could be a gateway drug? For teachers, like, if you can relinquish this much control, maybe, because I think there are some teachers that struggle even with that.
Yeah. You know,
there's the, or they'll do it, they'll kind of resort to the, I ask a question, and just wait for the one or two things to come up, and even that as a kid, even if it's fairly fast paced, I think they're, kids are on board just like they would be with a lecture, but also I see on the teacher side, it's like, why don't you first even let them share with their partner how they felt about it? And I don't know. I'm just going on my own like observations in class and saying, how do we go, okay, can you at least do this much? If you do this much, how can you move them over to doing something as big as letting the kid teach another kid?
Yeah, and I think it has to be very structured. So all of the research and the programs that have been researched have been structured. But then for teachers to learn that structure, it definitely takes a lot on their part. So any kind of peer to peer strategies needs to be something that the teachers could easily implement with a quick 15-minute kind of overview lesson for what the kids are expected to do. And I think it is possible. When you were saying, you know, even with people raising their hands in the classroom, that's one thing that as a teacher, I love to let my kids explain their thinking. But sometimes I can just see it on the other kids' faces that it gets a little long. Like the one kid will be explaining, I'm a fourth grade teacher, so the kids are still working on their communication skills. And so sometimes what they say is not concise. They also speak at a low volume and the whole class is sitting there disengaged. Although it's wonderful that for that one child to explain their thinking, I think it's a lot more beneficial when they're in pairs and of your 24 kids, 12 kids at the same time are explaining to a peer their thinking. But again, it has to be in a structured way, which is what I'm developing with my peerly learning. And so giving that structure to the students so that they can, so that teachers can give up some of that control because they would know the kids are gaining just as the correct information from each other as they would be from the whole group, class, teacher.
So probably just tell us a little bit more, the teachers out there, how does Peerly work? If I want to buy this product or use this product in my class and I'm a teacher, how does that work? Do I just throw kids cards or say, hey, come grab one? Or is it like, we're going to do addition today? Please come grab the addition card. How does that all work?
I have really worked on a bunch of different methods for how I use what I call my teaching cards or the lesson plans that are given to each individual student. And there are different methods, but one of my favorite is when I have my learning leaders. Well, I always call them learning leaders because first they're learning before they are teaching and even, or they're learning as they are teaching. And so by calling them the learning leaders, they get that first you're learning and you happen to be leading the lesson at the same time. So I have my little learning leaders and I have all different methods, but my favorite is this learn a lesson, lead a lesson, or learn then lead, where they're with a peer, they instruct their peer on a lesson card, and then they kind of flip-flop where they are. And the person who had just taught moves to a new station. And it moves that way. They're not with the same peer teacher for 30 minutes or even 20 minutes. They get a lesson in about 1 minute from one peer. Then they pop over to another open peer, get the lesson from them, then they teach the lesson. And through that movement, they get a lot of movement in the classroom instead of just sitting in their seat. I think I'm a very active person. I like my afternoon runs and my hikes and my walks. And so like I was saying, just sitting there, it's very boring. And so I like letting them move and get that. Plus by switching peers and constantly throughout this lesson, if one kid is a little more literal in their instruction, then they're with that kid for a minute. They go to another peer to get a different or another lesson. Usually it's all on the same topic, but they just have that movement in the classroom. So that one I really like. Small group instruction, the reading lessons are really fun to let them guide the small groups. I usually start with like a trusted peer and then they stay with the same peer and kind of teach through things. But like I said, the learn a lesson, lead a lesson is the one they like the most. And it has a good amount of movement with the structure that I enjoy. It's...
I don't know what your classroom looks like, but do you default back to old school methods and then the kids are like, no, I'm going to teach. Bring it back.
Well, it's a balance. It's a balance between how often we are doing peer teaching. It's probably the only thing that I've ever gotten in my 20 years of teaching that a kid will actually say, can we do the teaching thing? Because I can't imagine, there's never been anything else where, oh, can we do our Alex math? They never quite ask to do that. Or, oh, can we read our leveled readers? They never exactly ask to do that. But I have a little boy, Max, and he'll say, can we please do those today? He's also gotten really into writing his own lesson plans. So he's he's doing that and working with me there. I would say I use it maybe 2, sometimes 3 days a week. But there's also other ways I do it. If a student is absent, I can take a peer who has done it, take that standard or topic, what I've written, and I give it to this to a pair. Maybe they slip out in the hallway during our quiet time, which is our after lunch kind of decompression time, and they quick catch up the peer who was absent. Or I have, a few years ago, I worked with I had a little boy, you know, that suffered a little bit from attention. He definitely, at a certain time of the day, I knew it wasn't quite the thing for him to be able to relax and read or work independently, so I could pull him with a peer. And then having that peer accountability, it was really great for him because he was held accountable instead of just wanting to get out of his seat and walk around the room. And it worked well. I love him. He was a great little, he's wonderful.
Do you have any other stories that, like, brighten your day when you think about how this works?
Well, I think this was probably 10 years ago, but I had a boy named Calvin, and I was an interventionist at the time. And I remember letting him, it was a very scripted program. It was the rewards program, which I think is a fabulous program, but it was basically like, okay, what's the prefix? The prefix is re. What's the suffix? That suffix is shun. And you went through that in a very rote kind of a way. So I would let my kids take charge and they would do it. So they'd sit in the teacher's chair and they'd go around, and the principal came in for an observation. And she just said, I've never seen him act like that. What? How? Like, of course, he just wants to be in charge. You know, when maybe he would misbehave a little, or who knows, maybe wasn't that engaged in the classroom. Putting him in charge gave him that opportunity to really, like, shine. It was him. He was loving it. He just wanted to be in charge.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm curious about, there's a difference, I guess, between where you would just do this for yourself in a classroom and just let it be your own little thing. What was the impetus to turn this into something that could be sold to other teachers, shared with other teachers, etc.?
I've always done research. When I was getting my master's, I looked into it, and all the effect sizes are all, you know, all the research that there shows positive with peer-to-peer instruction. My teammates have always done it because I say, hey, I'm going to do this. You want to do it? They're like, oh, those are great. I love them. My kids like them. But then I think it's been about a year. The third grade teacher, I said, hey, can I just write something up for you? I'm not going to tell you about it. I'll just give it to you. You try it and let me know what you think. And she came running into my room, Miss Bear. She came into my room and she said, oh, my kids loved it. I had goosebumps. They were adorable. And I mean, she's, of course, an excellent, amazing teacher. And so it made me just have the confidence that maybe other people would try this. And that same day, a little boy went home to tell his mom about it. And his mom then emailed Miss Bear and said, hey, whatever you did in class today, it was a hit with my kid because he loved it. And so I think that also is a testament to saying, like, hey, the kids enjoy this. They're having a good time and they are going home to talk about it with their parents. And then the parents are, she took the time to email to let us know how much they enjoyed it. So that's one. Or, and then it's also just the other stories that I see with them. My boy Cody, he was so cute the other day because here he is teaching parallel lines. And I can see him teaching parallel lines to someone, and he's moving his hands and making the little gestures over what are parallel lines. And how internal that was, that vocabulary word was to him when he got to use it in context. So I love that too.
That's great. Let's see. I have so many questions. What have you seen any competitive products out there? Like, because I I know that there's research about peer teaching that goes back to the 70s at least. You would think there would be stuff out there, but really, they just haven't
seen it. It seems like, I mean, there are great strategies for teachers to use in the classroom. Jigsaw method is where kids get to, you know, become experts, then go back to their groups and tell their groups about what they learned. But I don't think that has the structure that classroom teachers would like it to have, which jigsaw method, of course, is great and it has positive effects in the classroom. Reciprocal teaching, that's another one that I remember taking my master's classes and asking the professor, who was, you know, an admin at a district in town, and I asked him, well, what's this reciprocal teaching? He's like, I'm not sure. And so it surprised me when reciprocal teaching, he wasn't sure. And then when I went and I investigated it further, I was like, oh, this is exactly what I'm interested in. And it does. Reciprocal teaching is a great positive effect size on a classroom where teachers ask their kids to summarize, you know, but maybe be in groups of four to use questioning, predicting, summarizing, and clarifying. And so that one, too, is a great strategy set that needs to be used in the classroom to get that kind of explaining and socializing. There's been a lot in high schools and colleges with tutoring programs, and there's been so much with cross-age tutoring, but being able to be truly peer-to-peer verse, and like you said, with all of those different studies that are out there, so many of the studies in the 70s might have been an ability, a student with the ability, coaching another peer. And I think that's another reason why teachers aren't using it as much in the classroom, is because it does have that stigma that they think it has to be an abled peer with a peer of a different ability. And I don't think it has to be like that at all. It's definitely with purely learning, students are able to coach each other because they have the direction.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So, two things. Number one, advice for other teachers that want, they're doing something like you, they just, I don't know, either they are pretty sure this could work well, or somebody's told them the thing they're doing in their class could work well. What would be your go for it advice? Do you have what's the first step? Like, for example, I'll just say this one. I don't know if I've even shared this. I made a language arts game when I taught sixth grade in Wichita many years ago. It still sits in a box in my office. So what would you tell a teacher that's in that situation?
With them, you mean like them sitting on an idea?
Instead of sitting on that idea, you should.
Well, I guess even my first year when I started doing this, I thought, I'm not going to do anything on it because in a few years somebody else will make it happen and whatever. And then it didn't happen. And here I sit, 16, right. 20 years later, and no one has done this. And I think, well, I guess I have to. So I don't know if that's the right answer to motivate anyone, but maybe your idea is truly unique and it's not going to just suddenly happen like I thought it would. And
you
I knew it would be a
right. You had you thought, okay, I got to get the word out. So you had to get a web person to design a website, because usually that's a way to validate something. Even this podcast doesn't have a website. So I'm like, well, oh well. But that is a way to legitimize something and share what you've got in a way to have people go by. So it sounds like also you, or what I've heard from your story off, not camera, off microphone, so to speak, is reach out to the resources you know that can help you make that happen.
Yeah, and there are, through my town, there's a lot of small business development. Okay. So I have a mentor through a SCORE. SCORE is another mentoring for small businesses. So he's been very great in giving me advice. I was able to meet with, everything happens by chance. I called the woman who, if you remember DLI, Daily Language Instruction, I don't know if that was ever one, but they're written pretty well for language. And so I called her randomly to ask a question about if she had any new one. So I called the number and she answers, and she hooked me up with a lawyer in Denver to talk about some of the preliminary things there. Who this lawyer was, a gifted and talented teacher, halftime, and a lawyer, very impressive woman. So I was able to meet with her to get some advice, and yeah, just all the little resources when you start talking to people make it possible. Yeah, you have to put a little out there for organizing the website. I'm living in Colorado Springs, Colorado. The University of Colorado at Colorado Springs has an innovation program. So I worked, instead of getting a Bachelor of Arts or a Bachelor of Science, they have a Bachelor of Innovation. And I got to be like the lead of a team that they were working for me. So through them, they were able to assist me with like logos and name development and things like that. And so there's just different little resources that you can find out about for how you can start something new.
Yeah. So how does somebody that's interested in finding out more about Peerly, what do they do?
Their website is peerlylearning.com. I would love it if anyone listening just wants to write info@peerlylearning.com and just send me an email at info@peerlylearning.com, and then I can hear their questions. I can set them up. We're still in beta testing, and so I'm looking for people that want to try the lessons right now, getting ready for state testing. I have a lot of lessons written for reviews, which ideally my lessons are not to just, you know, replace instruction. It's to replace that rote worksheet and sitting around to do that. It's the practice kind of part after the teacher gives direct instruction. And so it works really well as the review of math concepts, of reading skills, poetry. Poetry has been a lot of fun to write and get out there. Figurative language, that's another great one. Idioms, Greek and Latin prefixes. So I have them all. Some of them are still being edited and perfected. But yeah, if they want to try something, I can let them know a little bit more about it. And yeah, just to email info@peerlylearning.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was good to get a chance to talk about it, because I am just really passionate when I see my kids just solidifying their learning and how impressive they are when they speak and say, well, I know this is bigger because the value in the 10th place is greater, and they'll use the math vocabulary that I've never gotten out of them in any other way.
As always, thank you for checking us out at The Peg Doesn't Fit. We appreciate you listening. You can find us on Twitter @ThePegDoesn'tFit. You can find me at Ryan D. Bartle 1.
And my personal Twitter is @EricJStephen. You can also email us at thepegdoesn'tfit@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at anchor.fm/thepegdoesn'tfit.
Drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Tell your educator friends or family, anybody. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week on The Peg Doesn't Fit.